In Utah, there are over 450 unsolved cases, including homicides, missing individuals, and unidentified deceased persons. Their stories are more than just statistics. They're about lives interrupted and families left without closure. Join us on this journey as we tell the stories of these victims, highlighting their cases and working towards the answers their families deserve. I'm Renee, and you're listening to Utah True Crime. Hi, everyone. So I just want to get a little warning that I'm hoping my dog does not bark, but if he does, I am so sorry. So just be prepared. You might hear a little dog bark if he hears something that he's suspicious of. So I just wanted to start by saying thank you so much for supporting the show and listening to this podcast. It means a lot to me, and I know it's going to mean a lot to the people's families that we cover on Utah True Crime. I wanted to just kind of give a little background on myself. As you know, my name's Renee. I live in Salt Lake City. And some things that I am interested in are true crime and hiking and being outside and just experiencing all that beautiful Utah has to offer. So in some of these cases, I might actually be familiar with the area and offer a little bit of my personal opinion and insight into what we're talking about. But today is not one of those days, actually. So I picked this first episode to be about Joyce Yost, and I never heard of this case before until I saw online that the Cold podcast had actually covered Joyce's story in season 2. So this might be a case that you are very familiar with and have heard a lot, and it is very detailed. I don't go into much detail, but I do hit the key points and highlight the most important information. So let's get into this. Joyce Lynn Yost was born on January 3rd, 1946. She was the youngest of three children, and her two sisters were actually like more than 18 years older than her. So she was basically raised as an only child. Joyce grew up in Minnesota and married at 16 years old and shared two children with her husband, Mel Roberts. Unfortunately, their marriage only lasted a couple of years, but they maintained a cordial relationship after their marriage ended. Following her divorce and becoming a single mother, Joyce struggled with a lack of support in Minnesota. Her older sisters had moved out of state years earlier, and when her ex-husband Mel was drafted into the Korean War, she decided that she needed more support, and so she moved to Sunset, Utah, to be closer to her sister Dorothy. Now, this was in 1968, and she brought her two kids with her, Kim and Greg. Soon after the move to Utah, Joyce met and married a second husband, a man named George Yost. Unfortunately, their marriage lasted only a few years as well. So, being a single mom, she struggled to support herself and her kids, and she actually had two jobs. She sold cosmetics at the ZCMI department store in downtown Ogden during the day, and she worked as a cocktail waitress at night. Now, our story really begins in 1985. When Joyce was abducted from her home in South Ogden and taken to her attacker's house in Clearfield, Utah. This happened April 3rd, 1985, and the man responsible's name is Douglas Lovell. I will only be calling him Lovell in this. So earlier on in the evening, Joyce had been on a date at a restaurant, and Lovell saw her there and decided that he was going to follow her home. He actually said, "I can't believe I'm doing this. I noticed you at Pier 3 and I was attracted to you and decided to follow you." Which, I don't know what to say to that. Honestly, I think we all have the same thoughts about that. So he told Joyce that he wanted to get a drink with her. Now, this is later on at night, and she's tired, and she says no, you know, no, let's, you know, maybe we might get some coffee another time, you know, basically not saying no completely, but I think she was a little scared and she just wanted him to leave. So she said, maybe we'll get coffee another time. Douglas Lovell told Joyce that his name was Dave. So not too far off from his real name, but not actually his real name. He did not take the rejection well. You know, I'm not sure it takes a rocket scientist to figure that out, but a lot of men struggle with taking rejection. We know this all too well, and you especially know this if you listen to a lot of true crime. So she said no, and he did not like that, and he started to assault her, and Joyce fought him back. She lost acrylic nails and an earring in this fight, and she actually keyed him in the face, which is awesome. You know, if you're a woman, I know that you have been told, hey, walk with your keys between your fingers if you're walking to your car at night. I've been told this so many times, especially when I was younger and was working late at various jobs. So I'm glad that she had her keys ready. I don't know if they were actually in between her fingers, but she used them as a weapon, and that's awesome. She was sexually assaulted and threatened with death if she went to the police. So he basically attacked her and brought her back to his house and then continued to rape her. Joyce promised she wouldn't go to the police and convinced Lovell to let her go. So she actually was thinking, I don't know how she was thinking so clearly, but she convinced him and pleaded with him, and he actually did let her go. So on the drive back to her apartment, Joyce said that the man told her that he was normally a nice guy, the type who sends roses. Again, I don't know what to say to this because it's honestly insane that this guy followed her home, got rejected, attacked her, kidnapped her, raped her, and then said, oh, I'm not the, this is not me. I'm the type of guy that sends roses. No, that's, So Joyce did go to the police because she was smart and she knew that this man needed to be behind bars. He was arrested and charged with felony crimes that carried prison sentences of life if he were convicted. She told the police and the judge that he had threatened to kill her if she reported the rape. But again, if you listen to true crime or you know anything about crime and domestic violence, you know that a lot of these men are able to keep offending despite having been arrested. And Lovell was actually granted bail at $25,000. I don't know why the judge set a bail for this man who was a violent criminal, but he did. And this meant that Lovell was able to convince his father to secure his bond. So his daddy came to the rescue and bailed out his son. Now, I don't know what Lovell told his father. Maybe he lied and said it was a misunderstanding. It doesn't matter. But we have seen so many cases of parents bailing their kids out and covering for their kids who's committed murder and heinous crimes. And it's something that I don't think I'll ever be able to understand. Someone, a parent who bails out their children or covers up their murders or rapes, and they just do it. They're just like, oh, okay, you know, I'll come and help you. I don't know if I don't understand because I don't have kids, but it speaks volumes about the parents that knowingly and willingly aid in their child's murders and cover-ups. Utah's 2nd District Court scheduled a preliminary hearing in the case for June 12, 1985. Joyce testified and she presented her account of rape to a judge. So Joyce actually became a victim from what Lovell did to her. And then she actually had to relive that trauma by testifying in front of a grand jury and a judge. She was so strong. She was a complete badass. I don't know how she did it, but she did. And the next court date, days before Joyce could testify against Lovell, she disappeared. She was last seen August 11th, 1985. So this has all happened in just a little bit of a time span. She was abducted in April, and she went missing in August of the same year. And police knew that Lovell was a person of interest in Joyce's disappearance. When police searched her apartment, they found several items with blood on them, including a washcloth and her mattress. Her car was located a few days later in the foothills of the Wasatch Mountains near Ogden. Lovell's trial began and ended without the star witness and victim, who was Joyce. He was convicted of kidnapping and sexual assault based on her testimony from the preliminary hearing, despite her absence at this court date. So, I think if you think about it, and it's obvious what he was trying to do, he wanted her gone so that she couldn't testify and he would probably be let off. But it didn't work. Even though she was gone, he still was convicted, which is awesome and speaks volumes about what her testimony had in it. He was sentenced to 2 terms of 15 years to life in prison. It's reported that on the way out of the courtroom, Lovell told Joyce's son-in-law, "She's gone, buddy. She's gone. You'll never find her." That, to me, feels like an admission of guilt, but that wasn't on the record, so that's not anything law enforcement can do about it. He still maintained his innocence and denied knowing anything about Joyce's disappearance. It would later come to light after an investigation that he had actually hired an old friend from prison to kill Joyce. But this never actually happened. He hired his buddy to kill Joyce, but the buddy didn't do it. So he was really trying to get rid of her because he was scared of being convicted for kidnapping and rape. And it seems like he took the matter into his own hands. But he's always maintained his innocence. So years go by after the presumed murder of Joyce without answers as to how she died or any sufficient evidence to pin the crime on who we all know did it, Doug Lovell. After six years, detectives spoke with Lovell's ex-wife, Rhonda Butters. Detectives knew she was involved in the disappearance of Joyce, and they actually offered her immunity in exchange for her help. She was understandably scared to testify against him, saying she was scared he'd kill her. So here's the thing about this. I hate that a woman helped her husband in a murder of another woman, but Lovell was obviously abusive, and I can imagine being in that situation where you're scared that you are going to die if you don't help this person kill someone else. That is an impossible situation to be in, but I'm really sad that it took more than 6 years for her to want to help. So here's a little bit more information about Butters. She was married to Lovell at the time of the alleged murder. She told the lead detective that she drove Lovell to Joyce's apartment sometime between 11 p.m. and 1 a.m. As she dropped him off, she told the detective that she knew what his intentions were. They were to break in to Joyce's apartment and kill her. Lovell had told her that, she said. So she said, "He told me what he's going to do, and I knew what was going to happen." This wasn't the first time that she had taken him to Joyce's apartment. Butters reported that she had taken him there twice before, which is how he learned one of the windows had a broken lock. So he had been basically casing out the place and was planning this. Butters returned home with their daughter and went to bed. Later that night, around 4 a.m., Lovell called Butters to say he was in the canyon. He wanted to meet her somewhere so he could ditch the car he was driving. So this is her account of what happened. When she finally met up with him, she realized he was driving Joyce's car. As they drove home, he had described what he had done. Butters said that she wasn't sure where Lovell took the body, but said it was somewhere near the Causey Reservoir. As Butters confided in the lead detective, she told him how Lovell would often call her from prison. So now we're in, you know, 1991, and Butters is helping the police. She's helping the police hopefully press charges against her ex-husband, Douglas Lovell. Butters agreed to record conversations whenever she went into the jail to visit him. On June 16th, 1991, Butters decided she would go to the jail, but she wore a recording device under her clothes for the detectives to listen to. I know, this is really heavy. I mean, this just seems like a cut and dry case, right? We know that he did it. We know why he did it, but we need more information so that they can bring Joyce's remains home, or at least find her. I mean, a lot of speculation, you know, people thought maybe she ran away, maybe she this, maybe she that. No, Douglas Lovell did it. We all know it. He knows it. And it's just a matter of putting all those little tiny pieces together. He asked her whether she would testify against him if prosecutors charged him with the murder. Lovell assured her that he had never told anyone the truth about what he'd done. So she's playing along. She's acting like she's on his side. He's probably thinks that she's still scared of him. And this is what he said during that recorded conversation. "I committed a first-degree felony to cover another felony. It's the death penalty. At the very least, they're going to give me life without parole. If I cooperate with them and go to them, they're going to give me life without parole. I plan to end Joyce's life. That's premeditated capital homicide." Lovell didn't know it, but he had just confessed to murdering Joyce on tape. Joyce was legally declared dead in 1992. In 1993, on the day of his murder trial was scheduled to begin, he pleaded guilty to Joyce's murder. So he's, again, trying to get in front of it before the court happens. So this is what he said. He said that he broke into Joyce's apartment while she was sleeping and threatened her with a knife. He said that she pleaded for her life and promised to drop the sexual assault case against him. He then drugged her with Valium, packed a suitcase of her belongings to make it look like she left on her own, took her to the canyon outside of town, and strangled her. He said he buried her body in a shallow grave in the Ogden Valley. Prosecutors agreed not to seek a death sentence against Lovell if he would lead them to Joyce's body. There were lots of searches, and he actually went on a few of them to bring the police to where he had buried her. I tend to think that he was just doing this to get out of jail because on those days he had complained, "It's so hot, I need a beer, I need a cigarette." So it seems like he wasn't actually ever planning to help police out. He just wanted to get out of jail and get the death penalty taken off the table. There was a 5-week search and he was still unable to locate her remains. Many more searches ensued, even up until 2021. So she's been missing for 40-ish years, and they're still conducting searches. It is assumed that his dad helped him because they've actually had dogs out and have searched a cabin up in the Wasatch Mountains that his dad lived at. And nothing has been turned up, though, so that's just a lot of speculation. Lovell was sentenced to death in 1993. So, yeah, he got what he did, and he was sentenced to death in 1993. He actually attempted to withdraw his plea weeks later in a letter to the judge, stating that he had not been advised of his constitutional rights. This guy is just a sleazeball. I mean, he is constantly trying to kind of Houdini himself out of situations that he put himself in. So I'm glad to see that he was served with the appropriate sentence. He's still in jail today, and I'm pretty sure that he is still saying that he's innocent, because he was like, no, I didn't do it, even though, yes, he did. On the day of his conviction for Joyce's murder, her daughter said, "He's got a second judgment day still ahead. Maybe before he's executed, he'll tell us what we need to know." Joyce's remains have never been found. Joyce was last seen August 11th, 1985. At the time of her disappearance, Joyce was 39 years old, 5'5 to 5'7, and about 120 to 130 pounds. Joyce had blonde hair and hazel eyes. She had a scar on her chin and a scar on her chest, and her ears were pierced. If she was alive today, she would be 78 years old. If you know anything about the disappearance and murder of Joyce Yost, call the South Ogden Police Department at 801-622-2800. So guys, that was a pretty heavy case. It's one of Utah's only nobody homicide cases that has actually been, that someone has actually been convicted in. If you're at all familiar with true crime, you know that those are the hardest cases to prosecute when there's no body, because there's usually not enough evidence for cause of death, time of death, everything like that. But I have to give it to the detectives that they were very thorough in this investigation. And if it weren't for his ex-wife, Rhonda Butters, helping out with the investigation, they might have never gotten him charged with her murder. So it seems this is overall completely a tragedy, but I'm glad that Joyce's kids know that the man that did this is behind bars and that he was charged with her murder. I had never heard of this case, and I strongly encourage all of you to head over to The Cold Podcast and listen to season 2. It is much more in depth, much more investigative than this episode, and you really get to learn about Joyce, her life, and Douglas Lovell more. So I encourage you to do that. If you like this podcast and you're going to continue to listen and support the show, I would really appreciate that you follow me on Instagram at Utah True Crime Pod. And if you have case suggestions, you can email them to UtahTrueCrimePodcast@gmail.com. All right. Well, I'm gearing up for another fun weekend in the Beehive State. My husband and I have plans to go to Be Healthy Utah this weekend and learn about more health and wellness and all those products. We're going to support his sister who has a booth there. So I hope everyone has a great week, and please, please enjoy this amazing weather outside we've been having. Thanks, and I'll see you next time on Utah True Crime.